the rest of the world doesn't live the way the dental industry thinks you should live. And I think if you're good about that and your explanation is based on how you can help them, how you can serve them reach those goals and those checklists, then at that point, that becomes a scenario where you find dentists are highly interested in that kind of model.
You're listening to the Dental Sherpas podcast, where we make it easier to transform your practice, get out of the chair and into the life you want. Well, welcome everyone to today's episode. I've got my good friend, Sed Lewis, Dr. Sed Lewis out in Hawaii on the phone again today. And we've got some good stuff to talk about associate doctors today. Sed, are you ready to dive into this?
Yeah, let's get going.
You know, so we've been talking about some base camp ideas, foundational ideas to building a practice. And we've kind of moved into using our motif about climbing Everest, moved into some real kind of camp one ideas. And we've talked about processes and systems to put into place on how to manage a practice towards the owner doctor getting out of the chair. So to get out of the chair, you have to add associate doctors, right, Sed? I mean, somebody's got to be doing the work. So last week we talked about hygiene being the river that supplies the power, so to speak, to the practice. We talked about what patients would prefer. And if you guys have not listened to that hygiene podcast, I highly recommend you going back and taking a listen to that. So we talked a lot about hygiene and how it is really the power of the practice and how, you know, Dr. Lewis and our clients have tapped into what patients really want. And that has really kind of blown up the practice. And what they really want are these before work, after work, and weekend hygiene visits. So as a result, Sed, you've opened up from 7 in the morning, you talked about last week, to 9 at night, Monday through Friday, and 8 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday. We talked about how to staff those hours with hygienists, you know, front office and assistants, but now let's talk about doctors. So after that long lead in, let me ask you this. How do you find associates to work those hours? How do you get them to buy into this vision that you have for your practice?
Well, it's going to be challenging. I'm going to start there. One of the things that we have done in our practice is that we oftentimes tap into what that individual doctor is looking for. In many respects, we're continually recruiting, meaning that we're putting ads out in the platforms that many of you probably consider doing now who are looking for associates, using platforms like Indeed or different types of recruitment sites out there, whether they're through dental agencies or through your typical job sites.
But
your typical kind of a thing, right? But what we try to do is that when we engage these doctors, we really try to find out what they're looking for, what's in their heart, what they're kind of trying to find in regards to their dental home. And that's the first place we start with. We never kind of start with, here's our hours, here's what we do. But we try to basically, and typically what we find when we engage them is many of them are obviously looking to make a lot of money. That's number one. The number two thing is they want flexibility. They want life-work balance. And the other thing they want is autonomy, and they want to be respected. And those are things that we find that the general pool of doctors we look for want those things, and we are able to get them those things, but just kind of reframing their perspective. And that's our job to educate at that point. So the way we go about finding doctors is we oftentimes find many doctors. Oftentimes the doctors we find when looking for associateships with us have come from associateships in which they have not gotten those things, meaning that either A, they were in an associateship in which they weren't making much money. Two, they're working for a doctor or for a practice that didn't give them any flexibility in hours, meaning they're working on all the weekends or they're working on all the shifts that the owner doctor didn't want to work. And then on top of that, they were told how to practice, how to treatment plan. They're told exactly what type of procedures, what kind of materials to use in every procedure. So what we typically did is we re-engineered our way of talking to doctors. We found out what they really wanted and found out what they actually felt was the best way to practice, and we worked with them. So what I did in my particular situation to get your doctors to talk about maybe working with extended hours is I'm just kind of reframing the question. I'm telling them, hey, you know, it sounds to me like you really want to make a lot of money. You really want to have flexible hours. You really want to basically have autonomy in what you do. And that's something that I think we can work with you. So let's talk about my model. And at that point, we kind of share the model. And oftentimes it spooks them a little bit, but then as they have a chance to talk with not just myself, but my leadership team, my manager, my recruiter, talk to them, oftentimes their eyes widen because they start to realize the potential. So for example, I'm going to share a little bit of how we go about talking to the doctor who's used to the 8-to-5 Monday through Friday or Monday through Thursday model. We'll oftentimes start with, you know, hey, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but you know, our practice is open from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., which essentially it scares the living daylights out of them in the beginning.
Big eyes, big saucer eyes, right?
Exactly. But then the second thing we say is, just so you know, you're not working from 7 to 9.
Right.
We certainly don't want that. No one wants that in their lifetime. But what we tell them is like, you know, are you a daytime or are you a late afternoon, nighttime person? Like, how do you typically run your day? Like, I said, not even talking dentistry. How do you run your life? Oh, well, I'm a daytime person. I get up early. I like to get my stuff done. I like to have the afternoons free. Great. We do that all the time. We have many doctors who start at 7, get off at 3 or 4, and they'd like to spend the afternoons going surfing. They kind of get their errands done. They have nighttime workouts, whatever they like to do. It works out great. On the other side of it, they say, yeah, I can't get up in the morning. There's just no way I'm getting up before 7. Well, that's great. We've got doctors who like to start their day at noon or 1 p.m. and they kind of go in the morning and take time. They take a long, you know, time getting up, and we understand that. But you get started at 12 and finish in the evening, and it works out great for those people. Oh, okay. And so that kind of gets them to think. And the next thing we oftentimes talk to them about is, what do you think about the weekend? How does that catch you? And again, for the most part, it's not taken well in the beginning. But then we kind of reframe their thinking, right? We think, well, you know, hey, guys, you know, what if I told you that, you know, on the weekend, we would probably be able to get you at least 20, maybe 25 exams, which would probably mean to you in terms of your ability to do dentistry, probably getting you upwards of about $80,000 to $100,000 in productivity a month. Does that sound like something that'd be interesting to you? And oftentimes there's silence because many of these folks just never understood the opportunity. No, and the next question typically is, well, does that mean I'm working every weekend? Certainly not. You know, that's a wonderful thing about being in our practice is that we've got a team of doctors who shares that responsibility. And oftentimes we find that the doctors who do that and share the responsibility work well together. And consequently, you're at a point where you're going to be able to leverage those great weekends and all the exams and patients you're going to see and create very, very productive weekdays so that you have a very predictable way of doing extremely well. So that becomes kind of the way we talk to people. I think the challenge that just going to the concern that a lot of doctors have when they bring on associates is that they tend to kind of get this mindset of like, well, here's the offer and here's my office. And there's not a lot of ability for them to really kind of create a scenario of sharing the vision, of talking about not the vision of the practice mindset, mind you, but the vision of that particular associate doctor. So what we kind of really work on is trying to work within the framework of what we do, meaning what our practice mission is, what our practice vision and operations are, and showing them how that model that we do fits everything on their checklist.
You know, Seth, it really ties into what you were talking about, the shift that you made a few years ago of really understanding that your staff and your team were your client as well, right? We talked about that in a couple of podcasts ago,
right,
where you said, wait a second, how can I help them tie them to something bigger than themselves, but also help them achieve what they want in life? And so I would just want to reiterate what they love is, I mean, I love this list here. I wrote it down. They want to make a lot of money. They want work-life balance, but then they also want this autonomy and they want to be respected. And, you know, to be honest with you, I was talking to an associate, I remember years ago in a practice here in the Nashville area that I was working with and just kind of meeting with all their associates and handling the financial stuff for all their associates. And their highest producer was this really, really sweet, gentle guy. And I said to him, his name is James. I said, James, tell me about, you know, how you're producing so much. And I use this phrase, I said, in this out of the box model. And he's a very analytical guy, just again, just a big kind of teddy bear of a guy. And he looked at me and his eyes got big and he said, "But," he said, "we're not out of the box. We have actually taken dentistry and put it into the box that the rest of the world is already living."
Right.
Because if you know, when are people out? They're out early in the mornings, in the evenings, and on the weekends. And so what I just did was I looked at it and I said, okay, wait a second. Where can I make the most money? And so he chose to work, you know, a lot of the weekends. He was a single guy and he said, man, I can get in there and I can, you know, make a lot of money there. And what's interesting is that I think the traditional model, that 8 to 5, or really what I see is kind of 8 to 4, Monday through Thursday. Mm-hmm. One of the ways that we set up associates to fail is that practice can't make these promises. You can't have all three of these, the make a lot of money, work-life balance, and have autonomy and be respected, in an 8 to 4 practice Monday through Thursday, can you?
No, you really can't. That's the challenge, right? That's the rub. And I think what you start to do in these conversations is you certainly don't tell them that, but you kind of get them to that conclusion when you start talking. You start kind of sharing exactly what you talked about, that the rest of the world doesn't live the way the dental industry thinks you should live. And I think if you're good about that and your explanation is based on how you can help them, how you can serve them reach those goals and those checklists, then at that point, that becomes a scenario where you find dentists are highly interested in that kind of model.
You know, when I'm talking to most dentists, I mean, the vast majority of them, when we start talking about adding associates, they view associates as, if I can be frank, just a pain in the butt. They roll their eyes and they go, oh gosh, how have you experienced this pain? And, you know, what have you learned and how have you shifted your thinking around?
Yeah. Well, I want to acknowledge that I was one of those doctors at one point in my career. I'm not going to say that I found this way of thinking or addressing associates in a way that was highly sophisticated, and I knew that all along. I was stuck in that same rut. And I think it comes down to understanding, this is the key to it. I think we have to bridge the gap between ownership mindset and the associate doctor mindset. And I think the mistake that I made, and I can talk a little bit about a story that I ran into, is that years ago, when I was starting to expand the company and we were starting to grow another location, and I had one location doing very well and had about 4 associates there, I basically managed that original location through, for lack of a better term, an ego mindset. I was kind of telling them how I did things and how I set the tone and how they needed to act and how they needed to kind of step up. And I always
the Michael Jordan mindset.
The Michael Jordan,
right?
You're completely right.
Just give me the ball, and why can't y'all just be like me?
Exactly. And I think, to be honest, I think that's why many doctors, you know, you've experienced and I've experienced, feel exactly that way, because they're highly successful, accomplished people. I mean, these are guys who are, and for the most part, they grind, right? These are guys who have worked hard, who've done well, who've actually created a practice literally on their sweat equity. And then suddenly we're bringing in doctors and they don't see the same level of commitment. They don't see the same level of skill set. They don't see the same level of work ethic, at least in their minds. And that consequently gets them to kind of have this perception that all associates they're a pain in the ass and I don't want to work with them. But what I learned, and I basically, like always again, talking about failures again, what I failed at doing was understanding the mindset that associate doctors have. I started to spend a lot more time getting into their minds and what they actually coveted. And that provided me a much more clear perspective of how to go about working with associate doctors and how to go about working with them as partners rather than adversaries. So I oftentimes, that can kind of go into a little bit of a list of like what I try to do now and what I do know about associates to make that relationship a lot more successful.
Like, yeah, before you do that, Sid, let me kind of tie this back in a little bit too, you know, because, you know, when we're talking to a single owner doctor, you know, practice, again, that 8 to 4 Monday through Thursday, you know, I know you've seen this. One of the major issues is you bring on an associate and, you know, when I'm working with a client, I want to walk them through what I call associate math so that they understand the numbers. When you bring on one associate, most of the time you end up splitting your income because you have the same patient base and you've brought in this associate, and the associate's wanting to make money, right? That's at the top of their list. They want to make money. And there becomes this, like you said, this adversarial relationship. And have you seen this? The owner doctor is going to the treatment coordinators and the girls up front and saying, hey, listen, hey, make sure you give me, you know, this case over here. They start cherry picking these cases so that they make the money because they're thinking they need to pay bills and to keep their lifestyle up. And the associate kind of gets left out in the cold a little bit. I was talking to one the other day who the associate, I mean, this guy's the Michael Jordan of dentistry here in the Nashville area. Yeah. And on his own, he is just incredibly productive. And he's got this associate and he was just going, ah, my associate, he just chews up resources. He doesn't produce very much. And, you know, it was like, you're not giving him much to produce and you don't have the patient flow as well. So one of the things that your model and this model that we teach does is you have to open up the patient flow so that the associate is actually a multiplier effect, not a subtraction from what you're already doing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think one, the caveat I'm trying to talk about is that in order for that, besides the fact of understanding, you've got to provide them patients, you've got to provide them the ability to do well for the practice.
Right. Yeah.
You really have to understand their mindset. I think that's a challenge. I think the challenge is that most doctors who are owner doctors who helpfully struggle with the associate are not able to truly understand or want to understand the associate mindset. So that's what I spent a lot of time like really kind of learning about and trying to get in touch with again. It's allowed me to have much better conversations and much better ways of influencing them in our practice because I understand them, because I get what they're, what makes them tick. So I think if guys are looking for guys to just be revenue producers, that's one thing, but I think that's a short term, really not a sustainable way to go.
So you talked a little bit about this. Let's dive in a little deeper. How have you engineered your practice to give them what they want? Like talk a little bit about how you schedule them, those kind of things to make sure that they get those three things that we listed earlier.
Yeah. So the one thing that we definitely do is that the one thing is I'm always obviously making finding ways just from a strategy way to ensure that we continue to drive hygiene as being a way of building our practice. Right. And so the way we obviously keep associates happy and we keep associates feeling as if there's an opportunity in the practice is to ensure there's a really strong flow of patients into the practice, meaning that we're really good on our marketing and bringing people in at the right times. We're obviously good and working hard and bringing patients back to our recare and recall systems. But we're also making sure that we're not chintzing out when it comes down to providing them support staff. I mean, one thing we're trying to do always is ensuring they have great teams, great managers, great infrastructure to ensure that they feel very stable. So one of the things, I'm going to go again to those things that I now know about associates that are very important, is to understand what they feel. I think the biggest thing I would tend to think that doctors don't realize or owner doctors is that they have the same problem I have. And this might be, you know, your friend from Nashville might think about this way. He's thinking to himself, man, I've got this amazing practice and all this patients are flowing in. And this place is a, it's printing money. Why is this guy not doing well? And I would probably tell this guy that it's probably because you're making him feel he's got all the pressure in the world on his shoulders right now. Because the reality is these guys aren't dumb. This associate or these associates know they're in a successful practice, but they feel highly pressured. You know, they know that they're in a practice that's booming. They know they're in a practice that has great opportunity. But unless there's a certain level of empathy for the ownership doctor and understanding that pressure and working with them as a mentor, not a driver, inevitably there's a level of diminishment, not just in their ability to produce dentistry, but their confidence level in terms of getting to that next step for you. And the next thing I would talk about is that they oftentimes feel misunderstood. I mean, the reality is that they come in here, they might know some dentistry. They might even come from an experience doing dentistry, whether it be in another practice or another organization or maybe at a dental school. But you got to resist the temptation of telling them how to do things or what to do or how you get productive or this is how I do things, because inevitably you're not allowing them to discover on their own to improve their own game. So there's a certain level of that going on as well. And then I always try to do a scenario where I try to avoid micromanaging the typical doctor associate. I mean, there's so many times when I hear doctors who are trying to get associates on board or they're trying to work with them and they're very frustrated. But when I listen to their experience share with me, oftentimes it's just a large portion of their experience with me is all the mistakes the associates are making or all the poor treatment planning or the fact that they're redoing work. And it's always this certain level of like, well, they did this wrong, they did this wrong, and they don't do this well with the staff. And I'm like, man, what's he doing right? You know, so I mean, there's got to be that certain level of stop micromanaging these guys. And then the other thing that I take highly, highly serious in my practice is that I do my best as the owner doctor to make sure that I'm creating stability, right? I think the one thing that owner doctors sometimes think is, man, I'm just going to get this place busy and build it up, and we're going to get staff in there, and we're going to get this guy in there, and he's so lucky to be a part of it. But I'm like, unless you've got your organization set, and unless your team is behind that individual, unless that team feels that this new doctor or doctors are going to be an integral part of that team, and the culture is not there, you're built for failure, right? And so I think at that point, again, going to the associate mindset, if they come in and they don't feel in many respects a part of the practice, or they feel like they're going to be immersed into the culture of that practice, they're oftentimes highly uncomfortable. And then they're already looking at, and this happens all the time. I'm sure, Matt, you've seen this with many of your clients out there. They're already looking for the next position someplace else. Yeah. So how do I know that? It's because it happened to me. I mean, I've lost several associates years ago, and it got me to start thinking along this way and really diving in, asking questions and finding out what makes these guys tick. And I'm finding that going along my experience stuff, I have identified those four things I just brought up, that I'm really kind of tapping into that associate doctor mentality. And then I start to find the buy-in. I start to have them start to kind of get to the point where they become an integral part of the practice because they feel as if this person is listening to me, this person is vested in me, this person is trying to help me, and I'm not battling associates. I'm not having this like intellectual battle anymore. They just see me as being this person who's trying to like, okay, how do I get you to a point where you're more productive or more successful or more comfortable? Because that's my question now, rather than why didn't you hit this number last month?
You know, I was listening to another coach, consultant. He was talking about building teams, and I want to get your thoughts on this. He said, you know, you don't want to hire a taker, you want to hire givers. And he defined the taker as somebody who's kind of entering into the organization with the mindset of what's in it for me. And that a giver is someone who is saying, I want to be something bigger than myself. And as long as you give me that, I'm going to, you know, be really happy and all those things. And I was listening to that and I thought, I get his sentiment. Let me say that, not trying to judge too much, but I get his sentiment. But I also thought, man, I don't agree with that. I really think that, you know, and even just listening to you talk about how you're handling the associates and even the team behind it, everyone is, you're working hard to have everyone rowing in the same direction because they know it benefits them and they know how it benefits them, right? And they're measured on things that they can track and they're incentivized on, and everybody is benefiting from the success of the associate, the success of the team, including the associate. I think we all wake up in the morning and go, hey, what's in it for me, right? How is this, you know, helping me? How is this helping me, as you said, make more money, have work-life balance, have autonomy and be respected, right? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the challenge, right? I think many times we're not doing enough of that in many respects to basically allow that to occur. And that's why I spend so much time doing that, because I truly believe that, again, it's that alignment issue you just talked about, right? We've got to be aligned in that potential that everyone feels they're winning. Like if you get to the point where there is a certain management style or a certain belief where it's driven by, you know, a singular individual or the organization winning, then there's not going to be that buy-in. I think that has to be the challenge that doctors have to overcome, right? I think going again to this associate matrix we're talking about, I'll call it that, is that you have to somehow fit that same mentality that you built that great team on that's helped you for so long create this wonderful practice. And if you want the associate to fit into that, they've got to be a part of the equation. They can't simply be just an addition. Like a kiss can't be, to use a renovation, you know, term, they simply can't just be an add-on. You know, they've got to be essentially a person who's part of that team, who then becomes a valued part of that team, and you've got to work on getting them into that particular culture. So I don't really think it's as simple as some doctors may think, where I'm just going to basically bring on more patients, more staff, and I simply think it's just going to work its way out. Maybe I'm just simplifying the problem, but I think for the most part, doctors don't really want to do that because, again, there's that skill set thing, right? It becomes something where they've got to look into themselves and think, okay, well, now I've got to be a better leader. I've got to be a mentor. I've got to develop this guy's confidence. And boy, that's something that's challenging to me.
Well, and I do think a lot of things, you know, and this is really true in the dental office around a lot of different things, but it can work just bringing them in, adding patients and adding team and, you know, just helping them make a lot of money. but your turnover is going to be high. And ultimately, the practice is going to feel chaotic, and it's going to do exactly what you're talking about. Associates, team members are constantly going to be leaving. So ultimately, it's going to cost you a lot more money over time because you're constantly having to recruit. You're constantly having to train, you know, all those things. Well, we've seen, you and I have both seen that. We've seen that in practices of good friends of ours that, you know, there's a sense of, you know, chaos that, you know, ends up long term, ends up kind of costing a lot more emotional cost and also monetary cost. So with that being said, in your model and in your experience, how long do you expect a good associate to stick around? Because I want to make the distinction. We're not talking about partnership. We're not talking about, you know, them buying into the practice. So, you know, how long do you expect a good associate to stick around?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I oftentimes, this is where people don't like to hear these statistics or stories. And I'm not going to give you a hard, you know, number that gives you how many years are going to last. But I found in the past, just to give you my example of what I did in the past and how it resulted in retention or not retention for me, is that when I had the model in which I basically was driving it through ego and essentially just telling doctors to kind of, you know, raise their game, my typical associate maybe lasted roughly about a year and a half, 2 years typically. But I found is that as I've got to this level, I'm optimistic, and I've had some associates now who are in their fourth, fifth year and continue to be happy in the practice. So my feeling, and again, going to full disclosure, would I like to stick around forever? Yes, I would. Sure. I would like to do that. But at the same time, I'm also very realistic that people are going to grow, they're going to evolve, and they're going to potentially maybe move on. But I really feel that we've been highly more successful building our model based on understanding the associate mindset rather than one focused strictly on driving them through the numbers.
That's fantastic. Well said. I think we've covered a lot here around associates, and I have a feeling this is going to come up again and again in our podcast series as we continue forward. And so, you know, in the future, let's talk about a little more specifics. You know, how do you coach them up? Like, what is that process that you use? Let's also talk about maybe a little bit about how you pay them. I'll talk about some models that I've seen going forward. But I think we've covered a lot here for folks to chew on just around the mindset and how to make sure that you're creating an environment that the associate is getting what they want. So how's that sound to you?
Sounds great. Let's do it.
All right. Sounds good. Well, hey guys, thanks for listening. And until we meet again, we hope that you are on your journey towards getting out of the chair and into your life. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.